This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker above, high above sea level at Pod Bay 2A. We alter your locus coeruleus by cooking your brain with radio waves on a rotating spit to a tasty and toasty 325 degrees Fahrenheit. I am Mr. Michael Dean. We are talking to Mr. Davi Barker. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I have not been contacted by the government, but my brain has been afflicted with a calcified amygdala, which makes me completely incapable of aggression.
Cool, cool. That's the non-aggression disease. what does it do if you're in a fight-or-flight self-defense situation?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I'll protect you, brother. So, we were going to do a show tonight that was going to be all Cantwell all the time again, but MK couldn't make it because she is not a libertarian welfare queen and actually has to get up for a day job early. And it's hard for her to do that two nights in a row. She said she was going to try to take a nap and do it, but she wrote us and said she was too sleepy. So it's really not going to be the same without her here. So we decided we're just going to play this band Flipper that I really like and Davi's never heard, and we're just going to comment on them, and we're going to make the least link baity title you could ever have, which is Flipper, a tribute to Flipper, the greatest band ever, because Flipper's not very popular. All right, so Davi's sipping.
All right, now that it's properly sold.
Davi's, I got cat allergies, man. I love cats so much that I'm allergic to them. And I woke up from my nap tonight, and the alarm cat woke me up. There was a cat an inch from my nose, and it's the cat that purrs really, really, really loud. I don't know how long it'd been there before I woke up, but yeah, I got the sniffs. All right, so we got a few things to tie up from yesterday. Let's see. One was that I said I said something about Project Paperclip, the Operation Paperclip, the actual one, not ours. And I said that it was an operation of the U.S. government to bring a bunch of Nazi scientists over to America for the Cold War bomb effort and things, and technology effort. And I said, I know a guy who was involved in that, and he invented helped invent the microchip and was paid a dollar. He was not a Nazi. I'm talking about Kurt Lehovic. I've talked about him before. He's a friend of mine in L.A. He died recently at age 93. If you look up Kurt Lehovic on Wikipedia and the picture of him, it's like the only picture of him that exists I took in my apartment, and it's on the Wikipedia page for Kurt Lehovic. And he did invent the PNP or NPN junction process, which allows integrated circuits to exist, working for the Sperry Prague. Honeywell, I don't know, one of those old technology companies in the 50s or 60s. And he was paid a dollar. And he didn't get ripped off. He didn't feel bad about it. He's like, hey, I was getting a salary. And, you know, they saved me from the Nazis and brought me over here. So it wasn't just Nazi scientists. It was also scientists, like, fleeing the Nazis. I met this guy at a poetry reading in Los Angeles at a place called the Tsunami Cafe on Sunset Boulevard in Silver Lake. I used to go there and play guitar sometimes, and he would get up and read his self-published love poetry books. And he's a really cool guy, man. He was very far from a Nazi, and he actually owned a house in L.A. and, like, let a bunch of homeless people live in the house. I think that is very cool and amazing. I mean, it was and he was living in, like, kind of the crappy part of the house and letting the homeless people live in the really nice part of the house. That's kind of above and beyond, man. I dig that in a person. So that's number one. Let's see. The second I was wrong is I said that Chris Cantwell has made jokes about raping two-year-olds or having sex with two-year-olds. No, he's just
and that's
made,
not true. She was six.
Something like that. It's like it was something about toddlers or something, you know. And I can't find the exact quote. But I did find some quotes that are interesting that, you know, I mean, he could say, I would never say that. But he does have a post called, do you think this post will get me banned from Facebook? And it goes on, let's see. He was basically like trying to post things to push the envelope to get banned from Facebook so he could say, Facebook is horrible. You know, and it was like things about rape being funny. and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's not a cuddly guy, I guess. Let's see. Rape is hysterical. That's the name of one of his articles. So there it is. Yeah, he said people blow rape out of proportion. Rape is no worse than taxation. Relax. That's his quote.
And
this
wow.
This is kind of like all day, every day, like this guy does stuff like this. So I couldn't find where he actually said that he was making jokes about having sex with 2-year-olds, but he has made jokes along that line, and he has made jokes about rape being funny, and he is a joke stealer, man. He's his whole thing's kind of like Tosh 2.0, but just taken to more of a limit. And he stole a joke from me, so he's a hack. And let's see, what else we got? This lady from antiwar.com. You like antiwar.com, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Angela Keaton. Angela Keaton today asked Davi to speak at her funeral or freezing ceremony one day, or, you know, being blown out of the cannon after her passing. She wants Davi to speak and say that she was not ever a philostitute. Now, that's a word you've coined. What does that mean?
Philostitute is a person who engages in intellectual activities for money, or I guess specious intellectual activities for money.
Nothing wrong with doing it for money, but doing it when it's not what you believe is, yeah. And she's never been that. She's really good.
They're also known as mental escorts and sophists of the evening.
Oh, man. That's pretty funny. That is really funny. She wrote me today and said she loves The Fiend. She listens every day, every afternoon, and says that...
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yep. And she said that this is an interesting compliment from her, but she said this while listening to yesterday's Cantwell episode. She said, there's never enough freedom fiends. It's like taking bong hits of train wreck with a sprinkle of Valium.
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, generally people say something about, you know, joke about Valium as something that's boring, but I think what she means is like it's like all the excitement of the train wreck, but we're not yelling, you know. It's kind of mellow. I mean, I know she listens to us every day, so that's a compliment. You got any other one-liner announcements here? We got a whole bunch of them.
I don't think so. I just, something occurred to me on the subject of Cantwell and MK Lords and the Porkfest idol, that it is totally social justice warrior of him to be mad at her for winning, because she had absolutely no control over the applause of the audience or the decision of the judges.
Yeah, there you go. It's like being mad at, you know, the black kid who gets, or the Asian kid that gets into college over the white kid with better grades. It's like, it's not the kid who got in's fault. It's the system, you know. He should be ranting about the system, not about the person who is an unwitting, you know, recipient of the
like, what did he want her to do? Did he want her to get on stage and like not give her best performance because he was a disadvantaged class? Is that what was supposed to happen?
I think she wanted him to say, to give a speech and say, I can't possibly accept this. Chris Cantwell did better. Come on up here, Chris. You deserve applause, and hand it to him. He should have just run up and taken it out of his hands like Taylor Swift style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should give him a participation trophy.
You know, there's a couple things we miss, too. One is we were talking about the King Baby syndrome, and one of the notes of it, one of the symptoms of it is dependency, but wanting to appear fiercely independent. We forgot to mention that this guy Chris Cantwell lived with his mother into his 30s. And then like left and went on his own and, you know, couldn't make it and came back a couple times. And then finally he's out for good and feeling he can take care of himself. And he's like 33 or 34. And he said he recently defooed his mother, you know, which is like the he's a fan of Molyneux. Do you know that? You know, Cantwell's a fan of Molyneux.
I figured as much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of this criticism. I know a lot of people and cultures for which it's normal for people to live with their parents.
There's nothing wrong with living with your parents, but there's something suspect to me about living with your parents and then leaving and then saying you're never going to speak to them again. Like, thanks for taking, as Jim Jesus said, thanks for taking care of me till, you know, of Cantwell. Like, he's basically saying, thanks for, you know, feeding and clothing me and housing me until I'm 30. Now I'm leaving. You're abusive. You know, that's what defooing is. And also, yeah, like, he's always appeared extremely, like I'm independent. I don't need anybody. But, hey, got a dollar? But, hey, you know, my way or the highway. It's all, I don't need nobody, you know. And he is dependent, or has been until recently dependent while wanting to appear fiercely independent. So we missed that one. Let's see what other announcements we got. Okay, MK had some dropouts in her audio yesterday. It's not Fiendphone's fault. She was wireless, not wired. And one of the things of Fiendphone is you should always be wired to get the best sound and the best way of doing things. And Davi and I tried an experiment where we've lowered the default buffer target from 100 milliseconds to 70 milliseconds. And if there's no dropouts tonight, I think we're going to do a couple more nights of that. And if it works with no dropouts and good internet, we're going to make that the default on the next rollout of this. Another thing was somebody said that during the show, I said something about, like, you know, we don't get a lot of traffic compared to Chris Cantwell because he has, you know, 40 friends and then 15 sock puppets and then like 10,000 people coming in to tell him he's horrible. And that's not really a fan base. He has a lot. We don't have that much. But then I was talking about how our website was taken down because of traffic, because we had this WP Supercache thing that was kind of going into a recursive thing and turning every web hit into like 10,000, you know, process hits on the server. And it was overwhelming it, even if it was getting like 100 hits at a time. And somebody said to me, like, wait, in one part of the show, you said you don't get much traffic on the website. And then the other time, and later you said, but you got a lot of traffic. And what it is, it's the difference is, we don't get a lot of web traffic because people come and subscribe once, but we got a lot of media traffic, which actually overwhelms servers more. You know, if you're getting terabytes a day of downloads, that's a lot more hammering on the server than, and we don't get that. We get like a terabyte a week, probably. But even so, like, it can come in batches when the new RSS feed goes out, and we'll have, like, you know, 100 people downloading, you know, an episode at once. And that combined with the WP Supercache overwhelmed and had us offline for a while. Oh, Cantwell's site was offline today. It's kind of interesting. I had nothing to do with it. It was the cloud, man. People always say, oh, Google the cloud, put your stuff there. And I've seen like so many sites with that Google the cloud error. It's kind of interesting too, because it said chriscantwell.com host error. And I was thinking, like, there's got to be a radio host joke in there somewhere. So you made the picture, and we're going to use it in the image tonight. And when we come back, you're going to explain about Mojo, Mr. Mojo Cantwell falling.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiendphone. I'm using Fiendphone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiendphone.
Fiendphone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiendphone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiendphone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
We're too busy arguing to do talk radio.
Well, you know, conflict is the essence of drama.
That's what I've heard. So, Davi, tell me about Mojo and tell me why you're making an image for tonight's show. It was supposed to be all Cantwell, and really it's going to be very little Cantwell, but we're going to use a Cantwell image of the comic book character Mojo. Now tell me what universe Mojo's from and why he's perfect.
So Mojo is this sort of obscure villain from the X-Men franchise, and he's not obscure to comic readers, but he's never appeared in a movie, and he only briefly appeared in the old cartoon. But he's essentially this big, fat, yellow blob thing.
He kind of looks like Jabba the Human to me.
Yeah, kind of. Anyway, he's from a race of beings called the Spineless Ones. And they
you put Cantwell's head on this guy. That's where we're going with this.
Yeah, put Cantwell's head on this guy.
And the meme is him like looking at a bunch of screens, one with his website 404 fail, you know, Cantwell.com host fail, show host fail, or computer host fail. And he's like surrounded by screens in this windowless man cave, and he's freaking out because all of a sudden like MK Lord's tattoo is on one of his screens, and he's like, how did that get on there? And it's perfect.
Right. So he's from this race that doesn't have spines, and so they were immobile until another race brought them advanced technology that allowed them to be mobile, and so he has this sort of spider-legged wheelchair thing that he rolls around on, but he's essentially this big yellow blob.
You know who's based on him, I think? In Death Clock, there's these two brothers that run the dieforDeathClock.com fan site that later become enemies of Death Clock, and one of them's like a tall, skinny geek, and the other's a fat geek in a wheelchair who like controls everything with his web empire from his wheelchair. I think that's based on Mojo.
Maybe. So he lives in a place called the Mojoverse, and he runs a show called The Mojo Show. And in the Mojoverse, there's no discernible government. Everything, like, authority is derived from your popularity and your ratings
on the internet.
In a sort of absurdist sort of reality game show television type of thing.
It's Cantwell.
And so he... And yeah, so he essentially, you know, berates and even mutilates, but humiliates and mocks people for ratings and is obsessed with the running of his show, The Mojo Show. And it's a universe of his own ego, right?
And you said he's a total control freak and spends all his time mocking and humiliating others.
Yeah. Because that's what gets ratings. He's a click whore, right? So, I mean, he's before clicks were the measure of ratings. He's from a time when gladiator style television programs were the sort of Hunger Games of the day, right? But
yeah,
he is really the perfect Cantwell. If Cantwell were an X-Men, he would be Mojo.
You know, speaking of like Cantwell's desire for power, did you know that Cantwell ran for Congress in 2010 under the Libertarian Party? But I posted the image unaltered as he had it on yesterday's episode, and it's got like the Libertarian Party logo and then like the Republican elephant logo. Like, I don't know what that means. And anybody who'd run for politics 5 years ago, I don't trust now, because I think they've still got the desire of power in them. And I don't think I trust anybody who ever ran for office, unless it's like that guy that wears a boot on his head in New Hampshire.
No, what about Ian Freeman?
I think it's odd that he runs for office, but I guess I understand why he does it. But I don't know. I still think he has like some belief of changing the system from within, whereas I really think Cantwell wanted power. I really do. If you read some of his posts from back then, when the Libertarian Party Long Island was throwing him out of their party he was calling for violence against, he was running for office, and when he lost, he started calling for violence against politicians. So yeah, they threw him out of the party, but it was nothing like Ian Freeman, man. It wasn't peaceful, and it was crazy, and it was violent, and it was power hungry, man.
I don't know. I think a lot of people's politics have changed in the last 5 years, especially these 5 years. So
I voted Libertarian back then, but I never would have thought of running for office, man.
No, I never would have thought of running for office either. But I did vote for Ron Paul, I think, in 2008, but not 2012.
Yeah.
And
actually, I didn't.
But, you know, if you were to look at my writings from the day,
I was done voting by that time. I voted for Bob Barr. That was the last guy I voted for. That was,
wow, really?
That was in like 2006 or something. Yeah. Cantwell wasn't even a libertarian then. He's pretty much a fairly newly minted libertarian.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. If you read my writings from 5 years ago, they're much more constitutionalist than the stuff that I write now. So. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But I was never like a conservative Republican. I'd never like touted my elephant.
I was a constitutionalist for a month. It was like on the way from being a Democrat to being like an ANCAP. And I made the mistake during that month of writing and recording an album. My band, Right Arm of Wyoming, you can still find it. And it's like half the songs are kind of ANCAP and half of them are like, we needed stronger constitution. So that's my shameful past. But I never ran for office, man. Yeah,
I call it my short, unsuccessful romance with the Constitution.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
So I'm recording. I'm recording you clicking. Are you checking your web stats?
Yep, I have to check every 30 seconds just in case somebody else opened it. I want to know how long they looked at any particular article.
Yeah, I check my web stats once a day.
I wouldn't know how to do that.
I check them once a day, and it's basically the only thing I really check is like raw throughput to see if we need to like throw some more hamsters on the wheel running the server.
In reality, the only traffic I check is Daily Anarchist, and that's because I have to pay those writers.
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. Yeah. Somebody wrote me tonight. It was kind of cool. Somebody wrote me tonight and wanted they wanted to buy a Fiendphone t-shirt, and I was like, well, we don't have any. You know, if somebody donates a $200 donation, we'll make them one, but nah, I'm not going to make any unless they do. And he said, can you send me the art? I'll make my own. I'm like, yeah. And I sent him like all your art and my art, and he's going to put it together somehow and make a t-shirt for me and my wife and you and a couple other people.
That's cool.
Yeah. Charlie, get off the mixer. America's leader in pre-engineered Charlie, come back. Offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $5,000. All right, we're going to come back to some Flipper. MK Lords has a tattoo that says "Be here now." That is amazing. Where did you even
with the eye of the Illuminati?
I didn't notice that. I don't notice those things. Where on her body is that tattoo, and where did you see a picture of it? I've never seen it.
It's on her back between her shoulders, and I was going through her Facebook photos looking for that comic drawing of her, and I just came across that, and it was kind of a shortcut.
Yeah,
but I did find the comic drawing. It's in the image now.
Do you know what "Be here now" is?
It's a book. I think it's a book from the 70s.
No, it's one of his cohorts. It's Richard Alpert, who went to India and came back and called himself Baba Ram Das, and basically took.
Oh yeah, I know Ram Das.
He took a bunch of like, you know, hippie ideology and a bunch of Eastern mysticism and like LSD and mixed it into his own. He was kind of a lot like, I would say he was kind of like Molyneux, but not evil, you know, just kind of like took a bunch of stuff that had already been done, threw it in a blender and like called it new. But this book, like I was given 3 copies of this book when I was 12 years old in 1976, like within months of each other. So each of my sisters gave me a copy of it. And my sister gave my dad a copy of it. And of course he was like, what's this hippie crap? And, you know, put it in the shelf. And I said, can I have it? Oh, before I got the other 2 from my sister. So I figured the universe was trying to tell me something, so I read it, and it was pretty neat. My favorite story in it is there's one about him traveling to India and, like, carrying LSD with him, and he had these, like, 305 microgram doses of pure LSD, which is a really strong dose, and he said that he met some yogi praying in a cave somewhere and meditating in a cave, and the guy said, I have heard of this LSD of yours in your country. May I try it? And he, like, gave him one of the tablets, and the yogi, like, held his hand out more, like, one more, please. And he gave him another one, and he's like, he wanted a 3rd one. I mean, this is like a mega dose of LSD. And the guy took it, like, you know, he went and meditated, and like an hour later, he came out and told Ram Dass, like, I have a slight headache. I'm going to lie down and sleep. Like, I guess the implication is, like, he's so enlightened that, like, a mega dose of LSD just irritates him. Yeah.
Or he's just in control of those lobes, and he's able to turn it off if it's frustrating him.
But it gives him a little headache, yeah. But that book was, like, printed on recycled paper. It had, like, mandalas all over it. It sold for $3.33. It's kind of interesting. It was kind of like the whole Earth catalog for people who were into magic instead of science. But it was kind of an influence on me, man. I read that and Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman like the same summer. Yeah, it was one of Timothy Leary's Harvard psychiatrist buddies that you know, like to take drugs and have young ladies over. Because he was like catnip to ladies. Absolutely no effect. That was funny, man.
Here we go. Guns80.com on the web.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
All right. So we're going to play some Flipper. You ever heard Flipper, Davi Barker?
I don't know. You said that you heard it on Dr. Demento, so there's a decent chance that I've heard it and just don't know it.
Yeah,
so I'm sort
of
anxious to hear.
It's, I don't know if you'd remember it, because it wasn't really comedy. It was like Dr. Demento played it when I was, what year did I say it was? I was like 17, I think. And it was, I was born in 64, so what is it, 80, 79, something like that. And he played it like kind of to be ironic, I think, like just really weird kind of music that no one had heard. They basically invented grunge. It was one of Kurt Cobain's favorite bands. Kurt Cobain is wearing a Flipper shirt when they played on Saturday Night Live. He's playing a Flipper shirt for one set and a Melvin shirt for the next set. And Chris Novoselic later played in Flipper after Nirvana. So they really, really heavily influenced Nirvana, and they never were hugely popular. They were almost all of them drug addicts. Two of them died of heroin overdoses. I went through outpatient rehab with one of them. I remember a gig. I mean, the first time I saw them was in DC. Okay. First time I heard them was on Dr. Demento when I was a teenager. And like Dr. Demento said, and here's a toe tapping little number from a new dance band from California called Flipper. And he played this music and I was like, it sounded like a beat with static and screaming. And I was like, that is the coolest music I've ever heard, man. And and then later, when I was about 21, I was living in Charlottesville, Virginia, and they were playing in DC. And my girlfriend and I went up to see them, and it was the 9:30 Club. It was sold out. They added a second show. We got in for the second show. There were like 900 people in the old 9:30 Club at the location where Lincoln was killed, 930 F Street. And it was like 900 people in a room that held like 400 people. And we went downstairs and went backstage. There was nobody stopping us. Like, you know, everyone assumed you couldn't go backstage because there's guards or something, but there weren't. We just walked down there and I gave them a 7-inch record. Gave them all an EP of my band, Baby Opaque. The drummer, Steve DePace, like took the record and bit it in half. It was like something out of a movie. Like that's what punk rockers do when you try to, you know, glad hand them. And the other guy, one of the other guys, Ted Falcone, the Vietnam vet guitar player, said, I do a radio show. I'll check this out. If it's good, I'll listen to it. And he put it in his bag. And I was like, yes. And Bruce Luce, they had two singer bass players. They switched off on singing and bass. And Bruce Luce like took it, threw it across the room and looked at me and said, why don't you get out of here, man? And I was crestfallen. Like my hero just insulted me. And then I turned to leave and he said, but your girlfriend can stay. And she was insulted and left with me. They had a van. It was like one of those old, like, you know, milk trucks, the big boxes that they'd painted. Mm-hmm. Like it was just totally messed up. It was like rolling probable cause, man. And on the side of it, it said, Flipper suffered for their music. Now it's your turn. they were really controversial. They irked everyone they played with. Like they played punk shows and they were too slow for punks. Like punks hated it. And they were too weird for metalheads, and just, they didn't really fit in a niche, man, but they kind of blew my mind when I was a kid. I'm going to play, let's try to play Sex Bomb, which is kind of their hit, which is not really, it's really upbeat and it's got saxophone and it's very much unlike most of their music. And I'm going to be ready with the cuss dump here, but I know other songs and no one will understand if one gets through anyway, because you can't understand the lyrics. But great band, Flipper, Sex Bomb, going all the way back to generic Flipper, which I don't really know when that happened. Oh, it's an ad. Man, people in their ads. So let's see. Flipper was started by Ricky Williams, who was later kicked out of the band before they recorded. He named the band and started the band. I met Ricky one time. He was in the Toiling Midgets and the Sleepers and a band called Crime, which is like the coolest band name ever. Yeah, and I saw the Toiling Midgets play Bomb Open Form at the Covered Wagon Saloon in San Francisco. A failed, you know, like had better days as a country bar and then became a punk rock bar. And I went up to him afterwards and I was like, he was kind of like a musician welfare queen. Like there were a lot of those around this scene and in Flipper. They were always like underemployed and begging and on welfare and stuff. And I went up to him and I was like, hey man, Ricky, I love your band. Like they'd blow me away, the Toiling Midgets. And I was like, man, you guys are great. And he's like really like high on cough syrup. And he goes, thanks man. Give me a dollar. All right, here you go. Flipper, Sex Bomb. I'll leave it open so you can comment if you want.
It does sound like Nirvana. This sounds like Tourette's.
Except this is 1982, man. I know the girl this song's about, too. She worked at that weird bookstore on 16th between Valencia and Michigan. This might have been the song. Nah, it was not. This wasn't out when I heard about Dr. Demento. I think it was Love Canal. Out.
What a weird sound.
Yeah, it's like drum synthesizer.
It sounds like a duck call or something.
It's like a synth drum. This is the song I heard on Dr. Demento. It's called Ha 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 Ha.
Isn't life a blast? It's just like living in the past. And we go downtown to do our shopping. And we work in suburbia. But I say, ha 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 ha. Whoa, ho, 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 ho. What is there to do? She said. He said, come on, baby, and I'll show you good time. And so they went down to one of those cheap motels and they got all gushy and wet. Well, I said, ha 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 ha.
This song's called Shed No Tears. One of the lines is, shed no tears for a cop getting shot. That's why this stuff never shocks me when people write about it now. I was just dancing with it. I was dancing with that thought in 1982.
That's like when I say never cry over spilled cops.
Song was still playing and you couldn't tell. That goes on for another 10 minutes. So, Davi, what do you think? What do you think of Flipper now that you've been inoculated?
It's pretty cool.
You know, I just realized...
Like, it sounds like Nirvana's Bleach, right? Like their first album?
Yeah.
But then it's got those weird little sound effects that Dr. Demento would throw into the middle of places, you know? Like, it isn't just straight music. It's like...
Yep.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Too busy doing music to do talk radio. Davi was reveling me with tales of dystopian youth literature turned into movies. Which
I'm spoiling the Maze Runner.
Yeah, I don't care.
Although it's hard to spoil because it doesn't even spoil itself. You get all the way to the end of the movie and you still don't know what it's about.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in the second hour. But we're talking about Flipper, and no one knew what Flipper was about. And you know, I just realized something. This is probably the most commercial airplay Flipper has gotten since 1981 when Dr. Demento gave them one spin. Never, I don't think they've ever,
there you go.
Ever been on anything but college radio. Yeah, so here goes.
This could be their big comeback.
I think having Chris Novoselic play with them for one record and one tour was their big comeback. But yeah. Oh, I got an announcement. I did some changes on the Freedom Fiend site. There's a new player now that's not as fancy, but it won't crash. It's not Flash. It's HTML5. And it's easier to see all the links to subscribe and stuff. Yeah, man, I sold out. This is Ever by Flipper.
Flash before our very eyes, cast the light and the sound and the rhythm.
No, this is not Ever.
And that noise hit my body like a million years forever lost in space.
Bob said he heard a Zappa influence. I think I hear it too.
And everyone thinks that they know the proper way because of lights and the sound and the rhythm.
They had an interesting idea on intellectual property. So they put out their first record. It was owned by Subterranean Records, a record company. Then they got signed later by Rick Rubin to American Records. And he wanted to also put out their first record, but they didn't own the rights to it, and the guy wouldn't give up the masters. So one of them literally burglarized Subterranean's offices and stole the tapes and gave them to Rick Rubin. That's punk rock,
there
man.
There you go.
Yeah. Second record. I remember the review of this one said that their first record sounded like the good time you'd have at the Mabuhay Gardens at a punk show, snorting crystal meth off the back of the toilet seat in a stall with eight people in it. And this record sounded like you're coming down the next morning and you're all alone in an empty room, freezing. Best review ever, man. I liked it. All right, now I'm going to play Ever from their first album.
You think it's a real real xylophone, or is it a sample?
It's a real xylophone. I know the studio they recorded it in, Hyde Street. I recorded there, and they had a xylophone there. Oh, did we play Ever? Did we play Ever again?
I don't know.
Ever look at a flower and hate
Everyone
it?
Everyone live! The life is real!
I don't think so.
I like the hand claps are kind of offbeat.
Ever had to really cry, cry so much you want to die. Ever feel like you've been had so much that you turn mad. Ever been so depressed that this return to you brings distress.
IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands.
So it seems to me that Freedom Fiend Phone is holding strong at 70 milliseconds. So kids, try this at home. Turn your buffer down. You'll have less latency. And if you have good internet and you're using a dedicated computer and it's wired, not wireless, MK, you will probably not have dropouts. Although when I do a show with Ben and or Lou, like we have to leave everything where it should be because like Ben is on satellite internet, and then Lou is on Detroit internet, which is kind of like I think dial up would be a step up. He always has bad audio. But, you know, he's maybe Obama will buy him some internet. No, that'd be horrible. We got to do something. We got to get Lou out of Detroit, man. It's a bad thing. So this band Flipper, Davy Barker, had one of their albums was a board game, that gatefold album. If people don't know, if you're listening and you're young, there used to be these things called albums.
How's an album a board game?
The record sleeve folded out. An album was a 12-inch or 7-inch or 10-inch sometimes chunk of plastic, kind of like a big DVD that was
black.
Oh,
you mean like the album, like the insert art? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So albums were these things that people used to use for music before everyone had a computer in their pocket. And it was basically like a big foot-wide DVD that was a little thicker and made of black plastic, and you like scraped it with a needle and it made sound. It sounds so like I'm talking about like something from the 17th century here, but that's what you used to do. And they would fold out the record sleeve, the paper cardboard thing it came in would open up sometimes, and people would clean their pot seeds out in there before there was Sensimia. But the album cover was a board game, and the goal of the board game, in the game you are a member of Flipper and you are competing kind of with or against other members of Flipper. You know, I think that kind of talks about why these guys never really made it, even though they were great. They could, you know, it's interesting, there was like no cussing in any of those songs. Were they trying to be radio friendly, or do you think they were just like, you know, they did cuss all the time, but they probably thought it was more, you know, kind of lazy to cuss in songs. They did cuss in some songs.
Too sophisticated for that.
Yeah, man, they were poets. So, but this board game, like, I'm thinking about, I never really thought about this. Like, part of why they didn't succeed was in the board game, you and your three buddies play members of the band, and you're competing against the guys in your own band. That kind of talks a lot about why that band never got big.
Does it come with dices or pieces? Like, I don't know. It's still kind of confusing.
I think it came with the board was the fold out of the record. And then the inner sleeve that the record was in, you cut it out and it was the cards. And then you were supposed to like steal dice from another game, I think it said. What did you say about?
It reminds me of Black Flag. Black Flag had an album insert that was like a DIY stencil, so you could go around spray painting their logo around town.
That's funny. That would be like treason now. You'd be charged for putting that record out now. You'd be charged with, you'd probably be charged with everyone who did it. You'd probably be charged with their crime. It's, you know.
Well, yeah, because ISIS has a black flag, right? So
oh, yeah.
You would be accused of
being part of ISIS and destroying municipal property. Yeah, that's pretty bold. I remember Dead Kennedys.
Yeah, because don't deface private property. If you're gonna deface something, deface municipal property.
there was a Dead Kennedy. I cannot condone the actions of my co-host. There was a
I can neither confirm nor deny what
there
I've
you
said.
Go. There you go. I didn't say it and I wouldn't say it, but there was a Dead Kennedys record that came out on cassette. It might have been cassette only, or it might have been, you know, record, vinyl, and cassette. And the cassette, it was a really short album. It was In God We Trust Incorporated. It's like a 35-minute album. It's kind of inspired by DC punk bands. It was really fast, short songs, largely complaining about religion and government. And the cassette of it was like one side. It was on one side of the cassette, the whole album. And the other side said, you know, remember they had that, like, don't copy that floppy kind of, like, music campaign? It was taping. Home taping is killing the music industry. That was the slogan that the music industry came up with. And Dead Kennedys on the back side of this tape said, home taping is killing the music industry. This side left blank so you can help.
That's great.
Yeah. I tell you, man, nothing most of that libertarians do impresses me, because I have higher standards, because back when I was their age, I don't know, man, people were just funnier. And like, I don't know, man, like Flipper were kind of like the Chris Cantwells of their day. Like, everyone loved to hate them, but they weren't mean, like outright to, you know, they were just like, I don't give an F. And they really didn't, like, literally, if there was an internet back then, those guys would not have been checking their stats. You know, they would have been out like finding drugs, which is, you know, or playing music, which is what they were meant to do. You know, it wasn't
a freer culture.
Yeah, it was, man. It was. And I'm not saying...
I mean, it's hard to really communicate that to a younger generation. Like, freedom is not just about, like, the laws that exist on the books. It is about this sort of, like, invisible kind of systemic pressure of, how autonomous do you feel in your life versus how much do you feel like you're going to be up against criticism all the time or up against unknown laws, right?
Yeah. I get really tired of people who say that that if you're not an activist, you're not, if you're not out in the street or, like doing stuff in the street and petitioning the government and doing street theater and activism kind of stuff that, you're nobody. I've been hearing a bunch of that.
I'm not an
activist.
Lately.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I wrote an article about a year ago where I distinguished between activist and advocate. And they essentially said there are three kinds of people: activists, advocates, and quietists. Those who speak, those that do, and those who wait. And yeah, I'm an advocate. I've been out on the street. I've waved my signs and yelled into my megaphones, and I've voted and campaigned, and it accomplished pretty much nothing. But, being an advocate, being outspoken and just speaking my mind, I get emails all the time of people telling me that I've changed the way they think.
Yeah.
Right. So the idea that one out of 1,000 people that listens to this show might take something I say seriously is way more important than however many of the cars that drove by me carrying some stupid sign would have ever thought it differently because of what I had done. Right.
Yeah. I used to get snail mail fan letters when I was in a band. I got a couple letters in 16, 14 years of playing in the band Bomb, whatever, from 86 to 94. No, that's 8 years, isn't it? I don't know. 86, 96. Yeah, it's 8 years. Felt like 100 years. But I got a couple snail mail letters in that time of people who literally said my band kept them from killing themselves. And I really think that those two letters make that more important than everything I've done in the Freedom Fiends. Because I've had a lot of people say that we brought them to liberty, but I've never heard anybody say we saved their life. And that was pretty mind-blowing to me. Oh, I forgot to mention that my band Bomb's first gig was opening for Flipper. It was July 4th, 1986, at a place called The Farm in San Francisco on the bottom of Potrero Hill. I think it's yuppie lofts now, but it was an actual farm in the city with farm animals. It was a community center.
So it was an Independence Day show with fireworks and red, white, and blue streamers and things?
No. It was everybody's off work and it's a weekday. Let's get drunk and have barbecues. And there's no patriotism. There also wasn't a lot of it was just another day that no one had to go to work was really what it was. But we were the first band out of five band show. It was a nighttime show, but it was still light out when we started our set. The other bands were the Noise Boys, Tex and the Horseheads, and I don't remember the other band. But Tex and the Horseheads is one of those cowpunk bands I was talking about last night. But the funny thing was, the guy who put that show on also put on shows at the MAB. Is this guy, Ness Aquino. He used to he wouldn't even call bands. He would just write a bill of five bands he wanted to play that weren't on tour. And he'd put it in the paper and sell tickets and hope the band showed up. And I remember one time, he did a show at the Farm. I was there when this happened. he had it was the Circle Jerks, the Bad Brains, Iron Cross and a couple Flipper and Dead Kennedys or something. It was some huge mega rock star punk rock show. And he promised everybody 70% of the door. So, he brings in $10,000, he takes $5,000 off the top. He says, everyone's yelling at him to get paid. He says after the show, okay, one guy from each band come with me into the dressing room. Everyone else leaves. So one representative from each band is there. They're all yelling at him. He pulls out $5,000 in ones, tens, and twenties, in a garbage bag. He throws it up in the air and runs out of the room. That's how he paid the bands. Oh, fraud. It's so funny.
I've heard Hollywood parties work that way, that you essentially nobody wants to go unless some other celebrity is going. So you have to start rumors that somebody's going to your party before anyone else will say they're going.
Yeah, but they don't usually publish it in the paper and sell tickets to it.
No, publishing in the paper is a unique sort of, I guess, yeah, fraud is what that is, isn't it?
It absolutely is, man. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I would go.
flippers.
I mean, if I was still in a band and we still had any sort of performance to do, if somebody just like announced that we were going to be somewhere, I think we'd try and go.
Flipper suffered for your music. Now it's your turn. Yeah. They also did things like, sometimes if they were kind of like frustrated with the show or the turnout or whatever, like one by one, they would go to the bar and drink during their sets and like hand their bass and their guitar and their microphone to people in the audience until like nobody in Flipper was on stage, but there were four people from the audience playing Flipper songs.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of egalitarian. And I remember one show, they played at the I-Beam in San Francisco, and it was like, they booked the show like months ahead of time and they had like $1,000 guarantee, and they later like did something you're not supposed to do, which is when you have a guarantee like that, is they played a free show like the day before in the park. And, and so there was like nobody at the show. There was like, you know, me and my girlfriend and like six other people in this place that holds 1,000 people. And my girlfriend had a bunch of LSD, and, thank God, the grace of God, I don't have to do that anymore. But, I didn't actually do any, I never really liked acid, but, she dosed the whole band. And they were real. They played for like 3 hours to like six people, man. It was awesome. It was like a command performance.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I think that the most advocate thing I've done is helping make Fiendphone, because I really think that's going to change the sound quality of Liberty. And I couldn't have done it.
That's borderline activism. That's doing something,
I guess. Yeah. Well, it was actually like facilitating someone else doing something. No, I did a lot on it. I didn't do any coding, but I did a lot of work on it. I wrote the manuals. Yeah. The manuals are kind of part of the whole program. You have to read the manuals to really get the good sound. All right, we'll be back in the Freedom Fiends with Davy Barker.
Worms.
The Shiny Badger. After this trip to the market, where you can buy Flipper records for Bitcoin.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends on cassette, with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Yeah, it's Freedom Fiends. All Flipper, all the time. I guess the last thing I want to say about Flipper was, I don't like some of them as people, and they really don't like me as a person. And the reason I want to point that out is because I don't want people to think that I go after people like Cantwell because I don't like him as a person. I don't like him as a person, but I go after him because I think what he does is really bad. I don't even think it's like bad for the movement. I just think it's bad, and he thinks it's really good. And that's, it just needs pointing out and making fun of. Like, but Flipper, I think their music is great. I've always thought it was great. One of those guys in that band actually called me, Bruce Luce, who later went by Bruce Luce, because he got sick of people misspelling his name. Both are equally great punk rock names. But, Bruce Luce once called me a glad-handing little ass-kisser, which, you know, I probably was back then, but he had no love for me. And those guys like ripped off, like robbed. Some of them literally robbed, like broke and entering into roommates of mine, friends of mine, and like stole their stuff and sold it for drug money. And they're, you know, they've done some really despicable things as people. And I like their music, man. So it's not about whether or not I like somebody. It's about the output of their art, man. Is there anybody that, how do you, you know, that's the thing that like bands like The Clash, like I love The Clash. It's hard for me to listen to bands like that after I read an interview with them. And two of them are dead anyway, so, you know, like, neither here nor there. But, like, how do you feel, Davy, about, like, bands whose music you love, and then you read an interview with them, and they're just straight-up socialists, like, demanding government take everything from everybody and give it to everybody?
You know, there aren't really any bands that come to mind, but there's an actor who comes to mind, and that's Morgan Freeman.
Freeman.
Is it Freeman? I think it's Morgan Freeman.
No, it's Fiendman. So, Morgan Fiendman.
So, you know, good actor. Really, and I like some of his like straight talk on race in America. That's cool.
He's kind of pigeonholed, though. He always plays the mentor in everything.
Yeah. No, but so I heard an interview with him where he was asked essentially like, what's the most difficult thing about fame? And he said, oh, all your old baby mamas find you and ask for money. And I was like, wow, you are an a-hole.
I don't think he's I don't think he's an a-hole for saying, oh, you know, like having a lot of baby mamas or saying that. I think he's an a-hole for having not found them earlier and started giving him some of his vast amounts of money.
But that's my thought exactly. Yeah. I don't really care about the women. I'm talking about the children, you know. And so that interview has tainted my view of the man, especially when he plays these like pillars of morality and wisdom.
Yeah, like, you know? like God.
Like God,
he played God in a movie. Yeah, I mean, he generally kind of plays like the God player, the God character. You know, like the one who's the wise old black man dispensing wisdom to people. To the point where, like, I actually, when I describe the hero's journey to people, and I talk about the mentor, I say, you know, the guy that's usually played by Morgan Freeman, and then there's another character that's kind of the wild card that you think is going to get everybody killed, but somehow in the end of the movie, like, he saves everybody, and I say that guy's usually played by Steve Buscemi, or at least he was before he became a leading man. But yeah. There's some comedians and actors that I have trouble liking now because Patton Oswalt is, I love that comedian, but I can't watch him now. After that last school shooting in Connecticut, he came out and said that everybody in the NRA should be tracked down and forced to give up their guns. And if they don't give up their guns, they should be shot.
You know, Jim Carrey is one of these actors too, and it was because of his Cold Dead Hands video, which, like, I can get over actors.
It wasn't very good, too. Even if I was adamantly anti-gun, I wouldn't have liked that video.
No, but here's the thing. Like, it isn't so, like, I can get over actors having different politics than me. It's mocking the dead that really bothered me about that video.
As Nima Vedati said, it's dancing on the corpses of murdered children for politics.
Right. And that isn't like a conscious thing. Like, I don't have as much desire to go to the next Jim Carrey thing, right?
He's not that funny anymore, man. He hasn't been that funny in like 15 years.
That's true.
He was hilarious.
And he's like digging up Dumb and Dumber. Like, he's redoing Dumb and Dumber, right? So you know he's running out of ideas.
Yeah.
I wrote a commentary on that video where I suggested that he might actually like be struggling with suicide, because at the end of the song, he talks about, he has this like single breath, long winded rant like he used to do with Ace Ventura, where he talks about the gun owner just wants to put a gun in his mouth and kill himself.
That's projecting.
It's like, that is not,
it's projecting.
He was totally projecting. And it was also like, he's talking about compensation for small manhood. Right. And the thing that, the thing with that is that sports cars are the more famous thing, and Jim Carrey is sort of famous for his sports cars. So it made me wonder if that wasn't projecting, because that wasn't something.
I think the reason liberals say, like, oh, if you ever had guns, everyone would kill their neighbors. I think it's because liberals want to kill their neighbors. I don't.
And the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Davi Barker is typing furiously. Are you writing your representatives, Davi?
No, I'm writing my memoirs. I like to do that during the breaks.
You ever see The Simpsons where George Bush Sr. becomes Homer's neighbor and Bart ruins his memoirs? Shreds them with a motorboat motor by accident. Yeah. So you want to talk more about these stone cold socialists? Like, we just got an email from Nathan talking about he stopped watching Jon Stewart because he was hammering the gun thing over and over. So you want to talk more about this Jim Carrey thing. And The thing is, man, so, Jim Carrey is old. He hasn't been funny in a while. It predates and
he's
the
still,
gun
he's,
thing.
He's still not funny. So
I think I changed. This... I think I changed, and he didn't. I think that just that kind of physical humor is funny when you're young, and it's not really that funny.
He had some serious roles. He was progressing as an actor and getting out of his Ace Ventura days. But
he's progressive.
Yeah, so there's this video called Cold Dead Hands, and it's about a year old, but it came up. So I just want to read this because I really think this part of the song, which is the end of the song, is projecting. Because most of the song is about making fun of Charlton Heston, and this is not about Charlton Heston. So he essentially, like, at the end, he does – this is a trope of Ace Ventura when he gasps and then spits out a rant all in one breath, you know that? Routine.
Yeah.
So this is the rant at the end of the song that's done in the Ace Ventura style.
It's the rant in the third, the redemption rant in the third act.
It sums it up.
It's there in that place to sum it up.
It's or you get depressed because the money runs out, then you put your own shotgun in your mouth, then your kids walk in and they find you there like a headless chump in your underwear, and they move the gun and it kills them too, and your wife just doesn't know what to do, so she pulls a hand grenade from her shoe and she pulls the pin and it's all on you. So first off, Charlton Heston did not get depressed and put a shotgun in his mouth because the money ran out. Like, that really, like, that is a weird line to put in the song.
He died of Alzheimer's, a multi-millionaire.
So this makes me wonder if this is not Jim Carrey sort of projecting his financial problems into the gun issue.
Does he have financial problems?
I would imagine he did if he's not doing anything as successful as he was before. And he's a liberal, so he doesn't know how to handle money. So
he probably feels a lot of guilt about it, too. I would think liberals probably feel a lot of guilt. You know, they probably give a lot to a lot of charities and then still feel like they're bad.
The central fallacy of the gun debate is here, too. And they move the gun and it kills them, too. Like the gun is just sitting on the ground waiting to kill the first person to nudge it.
First of all, yeah, guns are not snakes that jump up and attack you. And secondly, like, most people that that have guns train their kids to be safe with guns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And their wives. And, you know, not the other way around.
Actually, like, I'm no fan of the NRA. I think they're a bunch of cop-loving statists, and they're really into half measures. You know, my favorite gun rights organization, if you're going to talk about people that actually try to work within the system, is Wyoming Gun Owners. If you just Google Wyoming Gun Owners, they're currently, like, helped get a bill in that may pass that will allow concealed carry permit holders to carry guns in gun-free zones like schools. That is, like, unheard of, and that's just the kind of thing that makes people like Jim Carrey's head explode, but it's logical. It makes sense, you know?
So this was the point, was that this song of his, where he not only makes fun of Charlton Heston, which I'm not a huge fan of Charlton Heston, but I don't like mocking the dead. He also venerates Abraham Lincoln in this video, which I have no stomach for that. It makes it hard for me to enjoy Jim Carrey.
We got to explain that. I mean, that to most people, that sounds like you don't think the slaves should have been free. Why do we not like Abe Lincoln?
Okay, so first off, Abraham Lincoln's campaign, before slavery or the Civil War was an issue in his campaign at all, he was bankrolled by Northern industrialists, specifically railroads, who wanted someone in office to raise taxes on the South to subsidize industry in the North so that they could push West. And that is sort of categorically fascism. It is a private-public partnership where a corporation and a government get together to tax the person who doesn't want to pay for the product. And that is why the South had a problem with Lincoln as
Back
president.
Back up off your mic a little bit. You're getting a lot of and this is a teaching hospital, so go ahead.
The other thing is, Lincoln did not free slaves under his control. The Emancipation Proclamation freed slaves in states that were not under his control, making it effectively meaningless. Even he called it a war measure. It was not intended to free the slaves. If you read his inaugural addresses, he says awful things about black people. He was essentially a racial segregist, where he wanted to ship black people back to Africa. And he's a tyrant. Like, the war cry of the Civil War was not free the slaves. It was save the Union. right? So it's an involuntary partnership. And even if you want to argue that a civil war was necessary to end slavery, the fact remains that the actual amendment that freed slaves, like not the Emancipation Proclamation, I forget which amendment it was, but it was voted on by a majority of the southern states anyway. So it was not a North-South issue.
And it also vastly, that same amendment also vastly increased the federal government. And not even to touch on the things that sovereign citizens say about that amendment, but it really did kind of like it removed the slavery from one class and kind of put everybody in soft slavery.
Right. You know, this is the other thing that I don't hear from a lot of Lincoln haters, but this one bothers me in particularly. The slaveholders of the South were against secession. And the reason that they were against secession was because they were confident that slavery was protected in the Union Constitution, but they were not confident that it would be protected in the new, more volatile Southern Confederacy.
I would have freed the slaves by raising private money and arming slaves.
Sure.
And that sounds shocking to people, like to liberals. Like, what? You want them shooting their slave masters? Yes. Yes, I would. Absolutely.
Yeah. That would be okay with me.
Yeah.
I would be an underground railroader for sure. It would be against the law. Who cares? You know, like.
You know, the house I grew up in actually was part of the Underground Railroad, the house in Westfield, New York. It was built in the 1840s, and it has what they call the carriage house, but it's really the garage. But it's like this a two-story building, outbuilding, that's like bigger than most houses that used to be a stable. And there was a place where the floorboards were cut out. Like, you know, you could tell it was like 100 years ago. And it was, you know, like local historians have said that that house was used, that hole was used to hide slaves on the way to get them to Canada. Because it's like, you know, this town is on, like, I grew up a mile from Lake Erie. Like, this was on the underground, the last stop in the Underground Railroad before they take them to Canada on a boat. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's why I hate Lincoln.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you go to the Lincoln Monument and you look at him sitting in his throne there, his hands are literally on fascias. They're those bundle of sticks with the axe strapped to them. So, like, the monument is essentially calling him a fascist. So I don't know why people get upset when I call him one.
Yeah, yeah. People that get upset when you speak the truth aren't generally people who really look at the facts very closely. And I'm not going to do a Southern accent to imitate those people because that's extremely insulting. And I have met, I've met as many educated, liberal, smart people in California, that I'd rather be around any salt of the earth from the South. And there are a lot of smart people from the South. There's a book by Jim Goad called, The Redneck Manifesto, which some people consider racist, but it's actually just kind of pointing out in very hilarious ways for a whole book the fact that rural whites are the only class that it's still okay to make fun of on TV, to the point where, like, anything you say about, you know, you could just get away with everything from going back to, like, you know, Green Acres to Duck Dynasty now, you know, anything where you just kind of like people are having rednecks being like edited to look ridiculous or written to look ridiculous. If you made that same kind of trope about, you know, blacks, women, Jews, Muslims, gays, any other, you know, minority group, you would be like lynched. You would be driven off of the media and, you know, thrown, just no one would do business with you in Hollywood.
Worms.
And I'm not feeling like I want to write a feisty blog post against the concept of white privilege. I've been this stuff is not new to me, man. And there's all these like newly minted libertarian bloggers who like discover this stuff every day and, you know, look at some video of some like some feminist who raises $500,000 on Kickstarter to make feminist videos or something, and they're really upset about it. I'm like, I've been soaking in this for 50 years. And, you know, I think another reason I'm not abjectly anti-feminist the way a lot of male libertarians are is I kind of like came of age in San Francisco playing in a rock band. And I was literally like sleeping with feminists every night. I was dating like feminist strippers, man. I mean, that's a thing in San Francisco is sex positive feminism. And they were my friends, man. And I dug them and I'd make fun of them. And I'd be like, oh, you and your feminism. You know, it was innocent to me, man. It wasn't like this specter that a lot of people make it up to be. And it's kind of like, to me, it's like, if you're offended by it, don't watch those videos. Now, you got dragged. You're not a newly minted libertarian, but you fell down a wormhole. What happened? Well, show me on the doll, Davi, where YouTube touched you this week.
Oh, are we talking about this feminist woman?
Yeah.
I got to find, you caught me off guard. I don't remember this woman's name, but she has a YouTube channel called Feminist Frequency.
And I don't know what that is.
Nobody should. But she's apparently this like big time YouTube feminist lady, and she's been on like TED Talks and CNN and things like that. But her latest thing is a Kickstarter where she raised like hundreds of thousands of dollars to make like 5 videos explaining why video game culture is anti-women and misogynist and whatnot.
And she picked up to the minute videos like Miss Pac-Man.
Miss Pac-Man, yeah, because that's sexist. Apparently putting Pac-Man
I don't
legs on
putting,
Pac-Man.
Putting
I don't
a
know.
Ribbon on the Pac-Man is sexist. I don't think Miss Pac-Man even exists anymore. I don't think it exists outside of emulators and maybe like, you know, one machine in a pizza shop in Orono, Maine or something. I don't know.
Here it is. It's Anita Sarkinesen, which sounds
Anita,
like some sort of Soviet name.
I thought you were
going
to say Anita Mann, M-A-N-N. Anita Mann. Bad joke. Bad joke that didn't land well.
No, I'm trying to remember. I actually used to know a girl named Amanda Huggenkiss.
No, you didn't.
That was her real name. Yeah, no, I did. Anyway. No, it wasn't Amanda Huggenkiss. That's the joke. It was Amanda something. Anyway, I don't remember. But yeah, so I got stuck watching this woman's videos. Anita Salsanisen or whatever. And it's so infuriating. She's essentially like her big thing is the damsel in distress trope. And she talks about how like all video games portray women as weak and stupid and whatever.
Not not Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Didn't mention her.
She's never seen it. She didn't look for those. She didn't look for the strong hero women. All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, I love when I try to like contribute to the conversation on video games. I'm like, well, and I mentioned something from like 18 years ago. That's like the most current video game I know of, probably.
Well, there are a lot of female protagonists in these games now. I mean, that's the other thing. When she was talking about Mario Brothers, she's like Princess Peach is only a playable character in one Mario Brothers game. And I'm thinking, like, no, she's in all the Mario Karts, and she's in all the Smash Brothers, and she's in, like, all of the side games. And she's like, except for these ones, which are not part of the main franchise. And I'm like, oh, okay, so they're not video games?
I can't imagine like being upset about it. Like she wants to redistribute the sex of pixels.
Yeah. You know,
phone.
The other one was Zelda from The Legend of Zelda. And so like the two famous Nintendo princesses are essentially kidnapped and just an object to be rescued. That's her complaint. And it's like, no, actually they're playable characters in a lot of these games and they have very in-depth stories and they're, you know, they're characters. They have
they have life.
Character. They have character traits. They have personalities. They have like okay, like Princess Peach is a ditzy blonde. Are you saying it's anti-feminist to be a ditzy blonde because there are real ditzy blondes out there? And I don't know.
So what does she want? Like to like require by law that a woman gets to make decisions of what these pasty virgin nerds come up with in the video games?
She wants to complain. She doesn't actually make any demands. She's just pointing out the problem.
Some lady from India who lives in America. I think she's from India. Some brown lady. I don't know who she was, but recently raised a bunch of money, probably from private or public funding, and made an anti-gun video that got like 1 million views on YouTube. But not because like it was 1 million views from like gun owners because it was so horrible. It was basically a little like morality play. It was like 2 minutes long and it's like, you know, it's kind of well done. Like she had some unknown actors in it and they could kind of act and like it was scripted well and it was written well and it was edited well and filmed well. But the basic plot of it is like teenage boy decides he doesn't want his mother owning a gun. So he steals his mother's gun while she's sleeping from her drawer.
Oh, I've seen this. And he brings it to the school.
He brings it in his backpack to school and pulls it out and gives it to the teacher to dispose of. And it's like, you know, he's like muzzle sweeping people and like teachers and, you know, bringing a gun into school, like basically
doesn't know if it's loaded
this,
or not.
Right.
Doesn't
this,
matter.
This video is telling you, if you're a kid, do something that may get you shot and will almost undoubtedly get you and your mother put in jail. You know?
Do you know who I'm talking about? This person, Salsa Neeson. Does that sound familiar?
Well, there's the famous writer who wrote the Gulag Archipelago.
That's what I'm looking for. I was trying to remember the name of the book.
This woman has the same last name. I hope she's not related to him. He was a total freedom guy. He was a freedom guy. If his granddaughter is this woman, it's going to make me vomit.
Solzhenitsyn. No, it's not. Her name is Anita Sarkeesian.
That sounds Armenian, not Russian name to me. Anything that ends maybe in IAN is almost always Armenian. IAN or there's another thing they can end in.
So like in one of these videos, she's talking about this game Hitman, where you are tasked with killing certain people and then hiding their bodies so that you can go on with the mission without people finding the bodies as you go. And she talks about how like one of the missions is in a strip club and these women are objectified and sexualized. And look at how you kill these women and then you drag them around by the ankles and the game forces you to treat these women as objects that you interact with in the game.
I would not play that game. Sounds horrible.
Well, so here's the thing. The people who actually played the game pointed out, actually, you're not supposed to kill the strippers. The mission of the game is to save the strippers lose points for killing the strippers, which means that she actually went and broke the rules of the mission so that she could drag strippers around in the game.
It also sounds like maybe she didn't really do much research. Like, you know, she spent, how much did she raise?
$300,000.
Yeah, like she probably spent a couple $100 hiring someone who knows about video games and said, like, show me the worst part of these games. Like, she might not even known, you know, that he was breaking or she was breaking the rules in the games to do that. And she just was really not doing her research. We're back in 5 seconds.
No, she would have
5 seconds. We're back. What do you want to talk about?
We can do more of this. I could rant about this woman.
Okay. So, Dobby Barker is upset about some feminist, and he's going to talk about it for the last 5 minutes of the show. Go ahead, Dobby.
So this woman, her name is Anita Sarkeesian, and she has a channel called Feminist Frequency on YouTube, and she raised a ridiculous amount of money to do a three-part series or a four-part series on the damsel in distress and the role of women in video games, as this is some sort of like huge injustice in the world that that women are portrayed in video games as that essentially video games have very truncated plots so that you can skip ahead to the gameplay.
You know why women are still considered damsels in distress by media is because women like this woman you're talking about want to outlaw guns. And if a woman owns a gun, she really doesn't need a man to protect her. She doesn't need anyone to protect her. And if a woman is not allowed to own a gun, she is a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
If someone tries to
kill her. If Princess Peach just had a fire flower, Koopa would have a run for his money. That's what I'm saying. So it goes to Donkey Kong was one of her first examples, where like the plot of Donkey Kong is that this gorilla kidnaps this woman and then this plumber has to jump over
Donkey
barrels.
Donkey Kong from like 1979? Who did her research for her, man?
So that's the point, is she's starting at the beginning and then moving forward. And she's saying like, this is the origin of this trope, and then it moves forward. And so first off, it's not the origin of the trope.
One of the first movies ever made, and it goes way before movies, but one of the first movies was made by Thomas Edison's company, and it was made in like 1895. And it's basically a guy tying a woman to a railroad track while there's a train coming, and then a hero coming up and saving her and then riding off in the sunset.
This is the great thing about this series, is all these gamers came out to defend their characters because they love these female characters. These female characters are not just like empty tropes.
Because
they
only
have
women
personalities. Maybe for some of them, but not for all of them. But one of the things is she has a clip in her video of a woman tied to a train tracks, and the gamers come out and they say, look, this is a clip from a video game making fun of that trope. This is not a video game like using that trope of the bad guy tying the women to the railroad tracks. It's a joke. And so there's all these places where she's totally dishonest about the clips from the video games that she's using. And one of the ones, the most egregious one, I think, is from the game Hitman. And the game Hitman is essentially you're a hitman. You're charged with assassinating people and then hiding the bodies so you can move ahead in your mission to attack other people, right? And there's one mission where your job is to rescue these sex slaves, these women who are in a strip club, by killing the boss. And in her video, she shows a clip of the hitman like killing one of the strippers and dragging her around by the foot. And she says, see, this video game forces you to engage in this violence toward women. And it's like, no, the mission was to rescue those women. You would have had to break the rules of the game to get that to happen. The game didn't tell you to do that. You weren't supposed to do that. You lost points for doing that. Your job was to rescue these women. So there's no game. There's no gameplay recording of somebody playing the game that way. She would have had to go into the game and recorded herself playing this way because nobody would have played that way except her.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, I disagree heavily with what she's saying, but if you really wanted, especially with that amount of money, you really could make a convincing.
She could have launched her own video game is what she could have done.
She could have made, you know, the video game where women are always the heroes, and that would have been a better use of the money. But, you know, she could have made a convincing argument without poking any holes in what she's doing, or at least not the same gaping holes that you could drive a Humvee through.
Yeah. She also has a whole series on the Bechdel test. I don't know if we've talked about the Bechdel test before.
Whether or not a movie has a female leading character, like who has a name and has any kind of like real development as a person.
To be two women, both with names that talk about something other than men to pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah. That's named after a comedian that I know from San Francisco who did like, this like totally feminist, totally lesbian comedian that I used to hang out with and liked a lot. She's a really funny person and she's not a man hater at all. And yeah, man, I don't know what's up with this new generation, but I don't care.
It's not a good test for whether or not it's a feminist movie. And the way you know that is because Jodie Foster yells at the victim in Silence of the Lambs, and it's not about a man. So Silence of the Lambs, a movie about skinning women, passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah. There you go. It's a pretty good show, Davi. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your warmness. Yeah.
A whole can of worms.
I'm going to open up a can of whipworm.